The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And welcome to First Bite, the Pride of Detroit midweek Detroit Lions podcast, where we bring on a guest to talk all things Detroit Lions news, analysis, predictions, all that sort of fun stuff. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I'm the editor-in-chief of Pride of Detroit. Again, still getting used to that. You can find me at Detroit Online on Twitter. With me co-hosting this week is Chris Perfett, at Chris Perfett on Twitter. Chris, how are we doing tonight?
I don't get a fancy new title.
We'll see. You got to work for it.
What do you mean? Hold up, work for it.
Listen, we're going through a whole new power structure. The Lions are going through a whole new power structure. We're going to get into it. We're going to have a meeting here and kind of work out, you know, maybe a culture task force meeting to see what your new role.
This is why you don't let millennials ever become bosses, because then you tell them seniority and they don't know what that is. Like, you just don't do it. Ever. No, we're having fun, Jeremy, and I'm excited to do this today because you know what? Screw it. I'm going to shut up. You introduce him.
Yes. Well, I'm sure what you were going to say is that we have one of your very favorite guests that we've had on the show multiple times. One of my favorite guests as well. ESPN's Michael Rothstein is with us at Mike Rothstein on Twitter. Michael, thanks for joining us again, buddy.
Michael. Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me. I know it's been a couple months. I'm trying to remember the last time we did that, whether it was right after the Bob Quinn Patricia firing or if it was right around the last game of the season. I don't know. January felt like 6 months to me. So yeah. I'm just pretending it's July, even though it's 30 degrees in Michigan right now.
The time doesn't work anymore, Mike. I remember I was like on the air with someone, and I think for some reason Mr. and Mrs. Smith came up as a movie. And for some reason I thought that movie was like 5 years ago and it was like 15.
Yeah, so, I can tell you where I saw it. I saw it in Boone, North Carolina. Yeah, I saw that movie in Boone, North Carolina, because my brother lived there for about a year. My brother's younger than me, and I was living in Virginia at the time, and I went down to visit him, and we went to see that movie in the movie theater in Boone, North Carolina, home, obviously, college home, at least, of former Lions punter Sam Martin.
So Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Mike is a big Mr. and Mrs. Smith fan. He will be covering all of the miniseries coming soon from streaming service X.
Hey, I'm going to be a company man here and tell you that I am really excited for WandaVision's finale here tomorrow. And I don't know whether it drops at midnight or not. I should know that. But if it does, I may just stay up and watch it because I've really enjoyed the series. And obviously, we're off the rails as usual.
Do you have a promo code you can throw the listener some way to make it worth their while?
promo code. Hey, it helps you. It helps me if you pay that. So go promo code. Go sign up for Disney Plus, and you also get ESPN Plus as well if you bundle it.
Hey, there you go.
And Hulu.
All right, let's get into some Lions talk. I want to talk a topic that we've kind of avoided over the past week or two because Chris Bielman had some comments a couple weeks ago regarding Sheila Ford-Hamp's role with the team, and it kind of caused a kerfuffle. Mike, I think you were actually one that asked Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell some questions about the infrastructure, the power structure, that sort of thing.
Let's get into that. Let's examine that a little bit, because I think maybe there are some concerns about what is currently set up in terms of who has what decisions and all that sort of stuff. I'm kind of curious about what you thought of the answers this week and what your thoughts are on how the power structure is set up currently.
Well, I am just still trying to figure out if I am an alpha, first of all, and if I need to then know when to concede, if that ends up being the case. Listen, let's start here, right? Sheila Fordham, people can say whatever they want. She owns the team.
Yeah.
She can literally do whatever she wants because, say it with me, she owns the team. So if she wants to sit on meetings, okay, that's her right. She could be Jerry Jones if she wanted to. She could be an owner that doesn't even pay attention. She is neither one of those things. Sheila Fordham, and I think I was on maybe soon after I wrote that profile on her in September, or we've talked about it, I know, on the show before, that the one thing that she is going to do is if she is involved in something, she's going to actually be involved. But she's going to let the people that she hires to make decisions actually, you know, make the decisions. And that's clearly what she's doing here. And you heard that from Dan Campbell and from Brad Holmes, that like, yeah, they may have her there. Like, she may sit in a meeting because she wants to know what's going on. But when they've asked her opinion, she's like, I paid y'all. You do what's right. And of course, listen, that's no different than any owner. And that's no different than years past whenever there's been a big ticket decision, right? Who's had to sign off on it? The person signing the checks. And who's signing the checks? Well, someone with the last name Ford or Hamp. So that I don't understand why people got so annoyed over that, other than I think it's the off season and people sometimes like to find things to be annoyed about. Like, of course your owner is going to sit out on meetings. And just think about it too. If you are, granted, I didn't start covering the team in 2013, but all I heard was that ownership doesn't care. Ownership doesn't care. This is just a paycheck to them. How often did we all hear that as people who covered the team? Now you have an owner that's caring and you're like, wait a minute now. We don't want that. Like, make up your mind. You don't get both sides of the pot. Pick a side. Like, you either want your owner to not care, or you want your owner to at least care enough to maybe be different and change things. And I think that's what we're seeing. So to me, Sheila Fordham, that's like a non-starter or non-issue. Like, of course she's going to be in meetings if she wants to be. And if you saw what she did last year, this should not come as a surprise to you, because she was around last year, even in a COVID environment.
Yeah, I think it's that last point there is kind of what probably touched off, is that we're not used to this in Detroit. It's a complete change. And I mean, we have seen a lot of owner stories kind of break in the past few years about, and it's never really been good when owners have jumped in. It's been, you know, Dan Snyder's kind of being held up as kind of that example. But I remember people similarly freaking out about Shad Khan when Shad was like, yeah, after dealing with Tom Coughlin, I kind of want to have, like, you know, a sign off on this. But as you say, like, it's their teams at the end of the day. So, I mean, I think it's some concern that it is going to be a Dan Snyder situation, but again, that just doesn't fit, I think, the profile of Fordham herself.
And not in the slightest.
And I think really the main source of consternation is simply the fact that it's a Ford doing all this, right?
Right. Fords in the past, William Clay Ford and Ethan Martha, were very, very, some would say to a fault with William Clay Ford, very hands off.
Right. But I think the people that were saying, you know, they didn't care enough, they're just done with the Ford. So now that there's a Ford kind of in there mingling, that's probably where the concern is. I'm with you, all you guys. I think it's ridiculous. I think you want an owner that at least knows how the sausage is made, right? Like, how else is she supposed to, if things don't go right with this regime, how is she going to know where things went wrong if she's not there in the meetings?
Absolutely. And the other part of it to me that I find so funny is that people also, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, were so up in arms about Rod Wood. And it's like, well, if Sheila's not going to be around, then who's going to, like, it's not like they're just going to, like, be like, hey, we hired you. We don't care what go. We are.
Yeah, Rodwood, famous.
You're spending our money. Person. Go for it. Knock yourself out. Like, no. That, I mean, come on. Like you don't get your cake and eat it too, and then get to, like, you know, also go and get a Frosty at Wendy's. Like, you don't get all of those options to have together. Like, you just, you don't. And to me, I think that what we've seen is an evolution of ownership, because when William Clay Ford owned the team, it was really his son who was around doing a lot of the day-to-day stuff as kind of proxy for the family, right? And Tom Lawan, but Bill Jr. was around. Like, he knew what was going on. He was the one who sat on committees. Then, you know, William Clay Ford Sr. dies, and Martha takes over. And Martha was more involved than people want to give her credit for. I mean, she did meet with, she showed up weekly. She was at every game, like literally every game. She was, you know, while she was the owner. And that, I think, was another step in a direction. And now you're seeing the next evolution in that, in what Sheila's doing. And I think that that's going to be what should be expected. Again, I think that this is a positive for the Lions, because I don't get the sense she's going to be like, you know what, I'm just going to be GM now too. Like, I don't get that sense, because there's like seven people they hired that have that type of like credibility / pedigree / like experience that would be just like, what are you doing? Like, I can't believe we spent whatever 5-10 minutes even talking about this, because me, it's, and I think I tweeted it at the time when like someone, I forget who brought it up, on 97.1, because that's where it came from. Like, I was like, why is this a thing? Like, again, she owns the team. These are her or her family's billions of dollars. Like, I'm sorry, if I was a billionaire and I was giving millions upon millions of dollars to people, I would want to know what was going on too. That just seems smart.
Right. But
I was just going to say, she's not running down to get off the yacht and make the pick like Dan Snyder. So right. Go on, Jeremy. I'm sorry.
I want to bring up, because you brought up the Lions have, you know, seven people in that front office with the pedigree to make those kind of roster decisions. And I think that might be the one place where there might be a legitimate criticism of this front office setup, this power structure, in that there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. You got Ray Agnew, you got John Dorsey, you got Mike Disner, you got, you know, Dan Campbell, who says he's going to be very much involved in all these roster decisions. Is that how you see it? Can this kind of work with that many personalities? I know they say, you know, it's all going to be kumbaya and we're no egos and things like that. But like, I mean, the elephant in the room is John Dorsey hasn't necessarily been that. He's kind of had some power structure battles, it sounds like, from Cleveland. So I don't know. Is there right to at least have some skepticism of how hunky-dory they seem to be pitching this whole thing?
Absolutely. And that's why I asked the question of Dan Campbell. And if, for those who didn't watch the press conference, I asked him, well, if you disagree, two of you disagree, who makes the decision? And he says, Brad and I do. And then I was like, okay, that's great. But who makes the decision when the two of you disagree? And that's when he gave this whole long answer. And that's where the alpha, you know, conceding line came from, which was the line of the press conference, at least from Dan Campbell, and then Brad Holmes's different flavors was his line of the press conference. They're certainly more entertaining than Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia, to say the least. But as far as that's a major concern. I wouldn't say major. That is a legitimate concern, and they can say all these things right now because they haven't had to make a major player decision yet, other than Matthew Stafford, which was kind of made for them in a lot of ways, right? Like, we'll see what they do with Kenny Golladay. They haven't had to agree or disagree on a major free agent signing. And I don't know if that's going to come this year because of their cap situation and just the reality of things. They haven't had to agree or disagree on a draft pick or a 53-man roster decision of maybe a high-priced veteran that one person likes and one person doesn't. Like, that's where it's going to get interesting. So I think right now they can say all these things and believe it, but they haven't coached a game. They haven't made a major franchise decision outside of Matthew Stafford. So let's see what this looks like in a year is kind of where I'm at. And if they can make it work, hey, that's awesome for them if they can figure it out, because they've done something that I think a lot of people can't do and a lot of people have tried to do and have failed in doing that. But I think, again, that all comes from Sheila Ford Hamp, and that's what she has wanted from like the jump when she got rid of Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia. And she said that in that press conference the day that they got fired them was, I want everybody on the same page, everybody on the same team. So she's hiring those people. And listen, the one thing that I think is a good thing with what they've done is that everybody has different experiences from different places, right? But almost everybody that's in a major decision role in that front office has a tie to Brad Holmes or a connection to Brad Holmes, whether it's Ray Agnew from the Rams or John Dorsey from having, you know, really wanted Brad Holmes on his staff. So there's that. And then Dan Campbell's obviously the outlier there, but almost everybody on Dan Campbell's staff, it feels like he knew in some form or fashion, even though, again, they had different experiences. So it's not like the last regime where everybody came from the same place and the same thing. So it's not really groupthink. It's just guys with different groups of experiences, but they all know each other already. So you would have to think they have some sort of familiarity. Where I think it will get interesting is if Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell disagree, and those two sides disagree. And that's where I wonder what would happen down the road. But listen, winning cures everything. And I think everybody understands this is going to be a long building process. But yes, I think there is reason to have question, as I did, about what this is really going to look like. And listen, it could be as simple as they don't want to say it, but, you know, Campbell has control over the 53 and I don't know, this is just me speculating, just to be clear. You know, Campbell has 53-man control. Brad Holmes has control over draft, like over the draft and free agency, like a lot of places. That is what the power structure ends up being. So it's possible that that's just what the power structure is, and right. They just don't want to call it that.
But, because they kept saying like the term too, like, you know, everyone has a defined role. They kept saying that. They wouldn't say what the roles were, but they kept saying everyone's got a defined
role. Right. I don't know if y'all watched The West Wing or did. It's like my favorite show of all time on television. but early on in that first, I think it was the first season or the second season, Josh Lyman is one of the characters. He goes up to the press room and he is not prepared to do this. And he talks about the president's plan to fight inflation. The president doesn't have a plan to fight inflation. So then there is a secret plan that is deemed that he has a secret plan to fight inflation because he's not. So it involves in this whole thing because it just of a misstep or like, so that's like when that defined role thing comes out, it's like, well, what are the defined? Well, we're not going to say what the defined. Well, all right. Yeah. Like, come on.
You mentioned winning cures all. And I think, well, first off to the question of what are they going to do if they just butt heads? It's just, yeah, they're just going to be alphas, man. They're just going to be alphas and I'll give the floor or whatever. I did want to talk about, though, you mentioned winning cures all, which brings us to, there's always the question of winning culture and everyone just says, oh, you want to build better culture. You just win. I don't know if I agree with that, but clearly the Lions also agree with me that they don't agree with that because we have this culture task force now, which has brought us some, interesting lines like Chris Spielman sitting down with everyone asking them what one pride means to them. And some, you know, I'm sure there's probably trust falls in there too, and corporate team retreats and everything.
Reps courses.
So. Oh God. It takes me back to my days when I had to do marketing. I hate that stuff, but just, I'm just curious, like what this thing is right now. Cause like on one hand, it is cool to see everyone kind of getting on the same page. But I think already in sports, you already have that locus that is, this is a big giant team sport where everyone comes together and everyone's kind of already preternaturally disposed to teamwork. So what exactly is going on with let me make sure I get this right, the culture task force, the CTF.
I'm a big fan, and Jeremy's heard me say this before. I'm a big fan of saying when you're not sure about something, you don't know. I don't know is a perfectly acceptable answer. And I am going to say, I honestly don't know. I don't, you know, maybe that's a bad thing as a beat person to say, but I don't know what this thing's going to look like. I don't even know what it means. It's kind of just, you know, it could very, very much just be this like nebulous thing that Chris Spielman's trying to do. It could be something that is very legitimate. I don't have the answer to that question, Chris. I wish I did. I think it, you know, probably falls in line. And again, this is just me speculating, right? With what we just talked about, which is like, they want everybody to be on the same page from the top down. And that comes from Sheila. And listen, when we talk about defined roles, I mean, what is Chris Spielman's defined role? We still don't know. And, you know, it's special assistant to Sheila and Rob, but also around guy who's around and doing everything. I don't know, man. Like, I just like that. That's sure. But I understand why he's there. And to me, I mean, so Texas, right? To go to the college space for a minute. So everyone knows Matthew McConaughey is like the minister of culture at Texas, right? That's really what I like when they hire Chris Spielman. Like, that's what that felt like to me. It's like you're hiring somebody who has great ties to this to the organization, or in Texas's case, the school, who is a great ambassador for the organization, or in Texas's case, the school. And he's going to be involved in a whole bunch of different things, as Matthew McConaughey is living in Austin. But like, that's kind of what I think Chris Spielman's role is. He just maybe has a little bit more football experience than Matthew McConaughey would have, you know, running anything in an athletic department. So that's kind of, I think, where I see it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you then. Oh, sorry. Real quick. Really.
Yeah. I was just to say, in case anyone doesn't know, you know, what we're talking about, why the whole culture task force, Chris Spielman talked about it on Tory Petri's One Pride podcast. Basically, Chris Spielman is doing everything, and he's got a group of three other individuals helping to establish and maintain a culture that also bridges together the football and business side of operations.
Let me close this up then. Let me ask Mike, since we're on the subject, what does One Pride mean to you?
it is the slogan that I see all of the time during football season. That is what it means to me. You knew very, what that answer
poor,
was going to be.
Very poor culture.
That's probably a better answer than you thought you were going
to
get from me.
Very, very poor culture right now, Mike. We're going to have to work on that. We're going to have to send Chris Spielman over.
Well, you know, as I have long said, and much to the consternation of a certain segment of Lion fans, I am not a fan of the franchise. I am not a hater of the franchise. I am merely someone who covers it on a day-to-day basis. So One Pride to me means it's my, like, that's part of my job. That's, I mean, come on. Like you knew what was coming. Come on.
It has more meaning to me than Dagger Time. I will say that, but not much. With that, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to look ahead to free agency, the draft. We're going to make some off-season predictions. Again, we're here with ESPN's Michael Rothstein. We'll be right back on First Bite.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we are back with First Bite, here with ESPN's Michael Rothstein to talk some Lions football. Let's get into the offseason ahead, because we're only a couple weeks away from free agency. Big things are going to happen even before then. And so let's talk. I guess the biggest domino yet to fall with the Detroit Lions, and that's Kenny Golladay. We didn't get a lot of answers, I don't think, really, from the press conferences there. They kind of walked around what they're going to do, saying they're keeping all their options open. They're exploring every option with him. Do you have a gut feeling, Mike, of what's going to happen with Kenny Golladay? Is he going to stay in Detroit? Is he going to get a franchise tag? Is he going?
You know, if you asked me this question 2-3 weeks ago, my answer would have been, I think they tag him and try to trade him. I know there's some numbers out there that's not all that common, but it happens like once a year. So there is no reason to think that, especially if you turned it around in a short time frame before really free agency got going in a heavy way, then I think it's something that could potentially work, or you maybe hope out that somebody loses out on free agency and goes from there. I don't really know. I can see them go like any direction they go would not surprise me. And I asked Brad Holmes specifically about whether the cap number and whatever that cap number is plays a role. And he didn't say no.
Right.
And that to me was kind of maybe an indicator. And I think you've seen it around the league, right? I don't believe, maybe I missed one, but I don't believe anyone's been tagged yet. And I think part of that is people are trying to wait to see what this number is, because a difference between 180 million and 185 or 186 million with some guys and some tags and some cap situations is the difference between wanting to keep the guy around for a year or not. And I think that that's maybe the situation for the Lions too, because listen, they made one move today to free up some room, and they are planning to release Desmond Trufant, as ESPN's Adam Schefter reported. I anticipate there will be more moves coming because they still do have to get under the cap. But I think if they decide they want to keep Kenny Golladay around, then yeah, tag him. But again, knowing kind of that this is a long-term plan, long-term rebuild, I think if you are tagging Kenny Golladay, you're pretty much punting on this free agent class, because you're just not going to have the money to do it unless you're tagging him and trading him right away. And that to me is where it gets a little bit interesting. And if you let, that's the other thing too. And I said this, I did a Clubhouse on Tuesday thing. And also I've said it a couple other places. If you let him walk, it probably also means you're not necessarily going to be big players in free agency, because you're probably going to be trying to get that third round comp pick back. And like, so you don't want to go spend big in free agency. Now, I look at what is out there in free agency. I don't know whether the Lions would be big players for many people out there right now. There's a couple guys that would make a lot of sense. But again, it's a financial, to me, it's a finance plus age situation. Because if you are going to sign someone who's a bigger ticket free agent, you're probably looking at a 4 or 5 year deal on a guy who's, what, 25, 26 years old? Like that, I don't think you sign anyone 28, 29 years old. You sign a new tree. Like, what's that going to get you? Because all indications are the plan is to be really competitive by 23, right? I mean, like that, everybody seems to feel like that, at least maybe outside the organization. But they've even said they want to build this thing sustainably, and they want to build through the draft. So I can't see them throwing a lot of money at somebody who's not going to be still in their prime or a foundational piece in 2023 and 2024. And the question too, frankly, is whether Kenny Golladay is that. And I don't know the answer to that, because he'll be hitting 30 and he's a big bodied wide receiver. And that can get a little bit dicey if injuries start to really take their toll. And he's had some injury problems in the past, although, you know, I think that that could easily go away.
Speaking of big-bodied wide receivers, do you think, you know, the Lions just signed Terrell, or at least agreed to terms to sign Terrell Williams? Nothing's official until the league calendar begins here, but they're going to sign Terrell Williams. You know, he has Anthony Lynn background and everything, but he does kind of fit that same profile as Kenny Golladay, a big 6'4", big-bodied receiver, just more kind of like Marvin Jones than Golladay, but still, like, They're already spending on one wide receiver out there to try to replace up to five that they're currently looking at who are their unrestricted free agents. And as far as I see as Terrell Williams, it might be a sign that they're just not going to, they're going to let Kenny Golladay probably explore free agency at this point.
Possibly. It's entirely possible. I took that more as what we all kind of knew, which is Marvin Jones and Danny Amendola aren't coming back. And that is kind of that Marvin Jones, Danny Amendola role that I think that Tyrell Williams will play. And it's interesting because Tyrell Williams, the second he hit the market, everyone really seemed to believe and think that he was going to end up in Detroit because of that connection with Anthony Lynn. So I don't know. I mean, it's possible that you might be right, Chris. That is entirely possible. Plus, I think a receiver at 7 in the draft would make a lot of sense. And then you've got a future one, potentially a receiver, if you're using them at 7, whether that's Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, or Jamar Chase.
And or since Ryan's not here, I'll just throw in Kyle Pitts too, just in case.
I mean, listen, I don't think they're going to. That would be, of any player that they could take, that would be the one that would surprise me the most, other than like somebody completely out of nowhere that's like, at, you know, that they could probably have had at, you know, at a different spot. But that to me could be the future of the receiver room. And, you know, it wouldn't shock me if it wouldn't, like I said, it wouldn't shock me anyway. But I think Tyrell Williams was a smart signing for them because, again, you want somebody who knows the offense, which he's going to know. You want somebody who's going to understand the culture that Anthony Lynn's trying to bring to the offense. He's going to have that. So that to me was a smart signing. And to, as I said, I think it's more a, you know, final obvious. We all knew that Marvin Jones and Danny Amendola weren't going to be back. But to me, that says absolutely that that's not going to happen. And I think that they can kind of figure out the Kenny Golladay stuff. I think that's separate maybe from the Tyrell Williams decision. That's at least how I take it. But, you know, I could be wrong too, because if they decide they want to really target a receiver at seven, then maybe that is the sign that, yeah, they're going to move on from Kenny Golladay.
And Tyrell Williams kind of represents that kind of signing that you think the Lions are going to make. And I think you're right there. It's those short one-term kind of prove it deals, because, you know, he is a 27, 28 year old guy. He's probably not a guy that's going to be a guy of the future, a guy that you're leaning on, but for establishing the culture in the first year, I think you're right. He makes a ton of sense there. The one thing with Kenny Golladay, though, with franchise tagging him, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, is there a chance they're going to use that simply to buy more time to make him a long-term offer? Because to me, I'm with you. It doesn't make a lot of sense to give him, you know, 16.4 or whatever it's going to be, $1 million for 1 year if you're going to move on. But it does buy them some extra time to potentially get that long-term deal. And maybe he's a guy that they do believe in as a guy that can be a part of the team 3-4 years down the road.
Sure, absolutely. I think that's a possibility. I you heard what they said, that they believe he's a number one wide receiver. And those guys, as many receivers are coming into the league now and as much talent as there is at the position, number one receivers still are rarities. And guys with Golladay's skill set in a lot of ways are rarities, because he is more of a contested ball receiver. He's a guy who can win in tight spaces. And let's be honest, if they're going to give Jared Goff an honest evaluation, and by all accounts, they're going to give him an honest evaluation in 2021, to see if he can be the future, because that solves your quarterback problem if you do that.
Yep.
Like, then you need a receiver that you know you can count on. And that could be Kenny Golladay. So you may, if you're real thought process is you want to compete by 22 or 23, maybe you do that, because that also gives you a better evaluation of Jared Goff in your offense and in your system. And I think Brad Holmes is clearly a believer in Jared Goff. So I don't think it would be fair to Jared Goff to try to evaluate his ability on the future if your wide receiver core is, you know, Tyrell Williams, Jalen Waddle, Quintez Cephas, and two other guys. Like, that's a tough evaluation to make. Now, if he plays well in it, then you know.
Right.
That to me is like this little hidden part of this, right? That they want to maybe be to get a real true evaluation there of whether you're going to have the 2017 or 2018 Jared Goff, or you're going to have the Jared Goff for the last 2 years that did not necessarily play as well.
Since we're on Jared Goff, let me ask then, because I know we just had this conversation on our podcast, and I know, you know, we still need to see if quarterback is like something the Lions target in the first round of this draft. But we just got done talking in our last podcast about whether or not you restructure Jared Goff's contract, reduce his cap hit for this year, and maybe look at him that you're just holding on to him potentially for more than, you know, at least the next 2 years. Like, where's your position on that?
I mean, I think it maybe depends on how active you want to be in the free agent market. It depends on how much you actually believe in Jared Goff. And it depends on who you can get. Like, so let's just, for argument's sake, right? Let's say you franchise Golladay. You want to make a real legit offer at John Johnson, because that could bolster your secondary. And he's 25, 26 years old. So you maybe offer him a 5-year deal, again, to be a foundational piece. And say you want to keep Romeo Okwara. Like, let's just say that, that's your free agency plan, or go after, say, Trey Hendrickson, who's 26 years old. Again, that youngish pass rusher. Pass rushers also tend to hit their prime more in like 29, 30, 31 versus other positions. So if that's your plan, then yeah, you probably need, I think you need to restructure Jared Goff. And you probably also want to, because like you're starting to build that foundational piece. If you're not going to be active in free agency at all, and you make enough cuts to get down to where you have enough money for your rookies and enough money for some other guys here or there, maybe you restructure, but you don't have to like that's the thing with restructures. You don't have to restructure the whole thing. You can restructure 3 million of it. And that's not going to kill you down the road if you want to move on from him at some point. You know, I mean, you could probably even restructure, I would say, up to 10 million of it. And I don't think it would do you that much damage, provided the salary cap gets, once everything with COVID hopefully gets straightened out, back to where it was in the past. So again, those are all different machinations that come into play. And, you know, I think we'll get a sense of the Jared Goff restructure conversation. I think we'll get a sense probably by the time free agency starts, because if the Lions make a couple of big moves in that tampering period before they can actually even have Jared Goff on the roster to restructure that contract, then I think we know that a restructure is coming. If they do nothing, then maybe they just ride it out and don't restructure it, but, or restructure a smaller portion of it. But those are all options. And I mean, listen, restructures are common. Like they are. I mean, they happen with every team. And I mean, think about how many times Matthew Stafford's been got restructured. I think about how many times Calvin Johnson, when he was with the Lions, got restructured. You know, it was like a yearly thing almost. So I think, well, Marvin Jones even got restructured at one point.
Yep.
So that to me, I think is kind of like, if they'll do it if they need it. And every team has that in their back pocket. So I think that we'll see whatever moves they make, and that'll tell us whether there'll be a restructure there. I can't imagine them restructuring the whole thing.
Right.
That would be, especially with the way they've talked. I mean, even Dan Campbell said it, that, you know, maybe they don't go after the big free agents, but they go after like the under the radar gritty guys, you know, paraphrasing. But that to me is, okay, maybe you need a few million to make that happen, but you don't need to restructure like the 20, you know, the 20 plus million of it to then hamper you down the road and put yourself in, you know, salary cap purgatory.
Well, while we're on the quarterback topic, let's fast forward to the draft here, because you had that conversation with your coworker there, Mel Kiper Jr., and he seems convinced that the Lions should pass on a quarterback with the 7th overall pick. They've got bigger needs. They kind of have to maybe develop a core around a young quarterback before going quarterback. The Lions have kind of talked their way around that. You know, we heard Brad Holmes say specifically, like, if you're in the top 10, you have to at least do your research. Dan Campbell, he was on Dan Patrick today, and he said something like, we like where we're headed at quarterback, but we're keeping all of our options open. Based on everything you've heard, based on your own opinions, is quarterback still on the table right now at 7?
I mean, I think it depends how the draft plays out, right? I mean, like, that's if all of a sudden Justin Fields or Zach Wilson is sitting there at 7, and you like him, you love him, you take him. What has happened to me with between getting Jared Goff and getting those extra first rounders in 22 and 23 is this offered the Lions flexibility, because now they can either package those assets to get up in this year's draft if they really, really wanted to, but they can package those assets to get up in next year's draft if Jared Goff's not your guy, or even in 2023 if Jared Goff is not your guy. And you know, to me, that's where I think that all helps. And I think if the right player is there, I think they'd take him. But I don't get the sense that it's this have to have him type situation, because that's the thing, too. If you're picking at 7, that might be the 4th or 5th best quarterback in the draft. Well, that's nice, but you can probably get the 2nd best. If that ends up being the case, you can either get the best offensive lineman in the draft and your like tackle situation solved for like the next half decade. Or you can take the 2nd best, or maybe worse, 3rd best, but like they're so interchangeable, like based on the board, that receiver. Or you take the best defensive player in the class, although I kind of agree with Mel Kiper that I think 7 is probably too high for a defensive player. But that's the beauty of it, too, is if there is a team out there that loves Trey Lance, if Trey Lance is still there, or loves Mac Jones, if Mac Jones is still there, with Carolina sitting at 8 and Denver at 9, and, you know, like a Washington or a New England, or, you know, heck, even Carolina in, you know, fear, and we've seen that trade up one pick scenario before, like you can get more draft capital. And what does Brad Holmes like want more than anything in the world, I think, right now is draft capital. And we've seen that. So I think that that's maybe why I would not expect them to take a quarterback, because I don't think they need to, but it would not if the right guy fell to them and they felt like that was their franchise guy for the future, it wouldn't surprise me if they did. One thing that I thought was really interesting that a couple of people had said to me, I think it was Mel Kiper that said to me, is that, you know, like, this is the most mysterious draft out there. There's so many unknowns. So I think if there's a known commodity you can take, you take it. That's me. Like, that second part is me. If there is a known commodity in this draft, you take that known commodity over the unknown commodity, because there are so many unknowns with everything that is out there. And to me, like, that's just kind of how I see it. I would be surprised if they took a quarterback, but if the right quarterback was there, I wouldn't be sitting there in April and be like, oh wow, they took a quarterback. Oh, my mind is blown. Like, no, I'd be like, all right, clearly this is the guy they believe in. And you kind of see what they do with everything else down the road after that. I think the last thing I would say on this, there are two schools of thought here when it comes to quarterback, right? One is you get your franchise quarterback first and you build around that quarterback. The other is what I call the Tampa Bay model. And I don't think Tampa Bay did this model purposely, but it is kind of what happened in that they built the rest of the team and a really strong team. And then they went and got the quarterback and an ancillary piece last. And that's what put them over the top.
Yeah, that's like old school. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the Lions could, with all of this draft capital, right? They could do that over the next 3 years. And then we all see what's going with Russell. Well, I'm just going to throw this out there. 3 years from now, Russell Wilson, right?
Or Deshaun Watson.
But whatever it is.
Yeah. Either one.
Thirties guy, right? Like that, right. That wants to win a title. Like the Lions have come, like, I'm just saying that if you build the rest of the team and your last piece is a quarterback, it seems like more and more there are veteran options available that are good. Now, we've seen that because look at it last year. Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, like, both those guys got their teams to the playoffs. And that, to me, is a sign that, like, if you want to go that model, if you can find the right quarterback, you can. And then also what it does, too, is it extends your window theoretically, because if you go on top of that and then draft your rookie quarterback behind that guy, like, then you got the rookie quarterback and you can still pay all those other players. It's a different way of looking at things than I think people have done in the past. But that, to me, is maybe that, not done purposely, but that Tampa Bay model is really intriguing to me of what could potentially be something that teams might try to emulate in the future.
It's a really good point. It's a really good point. And I think we're going to close on that. Before we do, though, Mike, let me give you the floor to promote whatever you got out there. Maybe if you got some upcoming stories. I know at some point you teased you got like a really good quote, and I don't know if you can tease us what that was from anything.
So my really good quote ran on Wednesday.
Oh,
Tuesday. So it was a boxing quote. It had nothing to do with the Lions, which I basically tried to say. I wrote about Clarissa Shields. She's actually fighting on pay-per-view tomorrow night. It's the first female first pay-per-view card headlined by a female fight in 20 years. It's the first all-female women's pay-per-view card. And Clarissa Shields, who's from Flint, is headlining it. So I spent a good amount of time over Zoom and whatever talking with her. And one of the other fighters I spoke with who's not on this card gave me a quote about how basically, I'm going to paraphrase this, go read the story, like, boxing is the bad boyfriend compared to MMA, and like, MMA is the one with the Cadillac and the nice car. It was the most real quote I've gotten in a while. I tweeted it a couple of times because that to me was like the money quote. I do have some stories coming up. I can't really talk about them right now. I have one I believe is running this weekend that I've been working on for a while and I'm really excited about. I've got a couple other coming down the road, some profiles, some features that would be kind of obvious based off of who's been hired that I've been working on. So Dan Campbell, Brad Holmes, I don't think that's like a secret type thing, as most people will probably be working on those. But I've talked to some really interesting people, and there's some stuff I have, at least as of now, knock on wood, that no one has written about yet. So that's basically what I've got coming up. You can follow me on the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, now Clubhouse too, at Mike Rothstein, Facebook at Michael Rothstein Journalist. And yeah, I'll be just, you know, hunkering down, busy during free agency like always. And yeah, I'm trying to do Clubhouse chats maybe once a week. And, you know, if y'all want to come by, and it's going to be very free flowing, ask whatever questions. There's not going to be much of an agenda. It might be very much similar to like the mailbag versions of my podcast, only you actually get to talk this time back when I have my podcast. So thank y'all again for having me. I always love coming on the show. It's always a blast. And we always seem to go longer than Jeremy wants to, which makes me happy because I feel like there's just like a little bit of annoyance with him when we go
how
longer.
Dare you? How dare you?
That Mike, let me let you on a secret. That's Jeremy all the time.
What? Chris, you're the one that's always hurrying up the show. You've got the radio guy where we got to get to break. I'm fine. No. I'm chilling.
When do I hurry us along? When do I hurry us along?
All the time. Chat, how many times do you see this?
Don't appeal to chat. This is for the recorded version of the podcast. They are not part of it. Like, they will get their time.
But Mike, we obviously always appreciate you joining the show. You're a blast to have here, and you bring a bevy of information as well, which we appreciate. So thanks again for joining us. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with the main podcast Monday nights live on our Twitch and YouTube pages. You'll get it on the podcast feeds Tuesday mornings. But until then, thank you all for listening. It's Chaos. Be kind.